As we start into the third title and the fifth show of this series, we're also taking note of the many things that are currently going on. Kim Jong-un is returned to the public after being missing and many suspecting he may be sick or dead. China and America continuing their Cold War and another display of the cyclical battle between the emergent power and the old power. COVID-19 continues its rapid spread across the globe, even as many countries and states begin to reopen or talk about reopening. And disadvantaged communities in America also continue to show an overrepresentation in the numbers of the infected and dead. People are attacking and killing each other over minor disputes as tensions continue to be high. And with all that going on, we're not going to talk about any of it because we got something that we do got to talk about because we got to get through it. But one thing that I will get into is a recent conversation I had with a couple of people who I respect immensely regarding the natural occurrence of viruses. And that's something that I'm going to dive into a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit. But with all that and more happening, we move into Title 3 covering changes and support for the healthcare system as we continue to see what you can buy with $2 trillion damn dollars.
This is Lessons from the screen. John Boy.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. And as always, you are very much welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black activist organization. Black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for black people in America through education, culture shift, and economics. And as always, you can go and check them out at www.pactsinc.org. That's pactsinc.org. Become a member, give a donation, go to the Learning Center, check out all of the stuff they got going on, take a survey, tell a friend to tell a friend. You know the spiel because it don't change. Do what you can to help them, because they are doing what they can to help you. And now, with all of the house cleaning out of the way, let's go ahead and get right on into the show. So, before we get into talking about the Title 3, I was having a very interesting conversation with, like I said earlier, two people that I respect immensely in terms of their intellect and their just general opinion and thoughts on life. And one of the wonderful things about my interactions with the people in my circle is that they don't always agree with me. And they actively push back and they actively ask questions and they actively challenge me to think about things in a new way. And while at times it can be frustrating, I'm sure for all parties involved, all parties involved also can sit back and really appreciate the level of growth and development that comes about as a result of that pushing each other to really think things through and to really try to see things on a different perspective. It's not even so much about trying to persuade somebody to your opinion so much as it's about, you know, getting somebody to understand a different way of thinking about something. And so if you don't have a circle that's doing that sort of thing for you, then you need to get you one, because I can assure you that your growth and development is being stunted by a lack of that sort of activity in your inner circle on a regular basis. But in any case, in any way, getting back into it. So we were talking about COVID-19 and the ongoing, seemingly from the moment it started, debate about whether or not it was a man-made pathogen created in a lab that was released for some nefarious purpose. And we have all of these conversations with the caveat that we just don't know. With the information that we have available to us, we don't know. We can say we suspect one way or another, or we believe one way or another, or we feel one way or another, or the facts say one thing or another. But the fact of the matter is we just don't have the information available to us. And even if you wanted to say, if you look at all of the reports that are out there, then you can see such and such and such. You also have to be honest enough with yourself to understand that what you're looking at may or may not be real, and you may or may not actually understand what's being written or what's not being written. So with all that being said, those caveats are out there, but it's still an interesting conversation to have. And during the course of the conversation, things shifted to the amount of man-made viruses present now or throughout human history that have been used to in weaponized form to harm the masses. And one of the things that's great about these conversations is that when you say something, somebody's going to ask why. Why do you feel that way? Why do you think that? And why is a magical question, but let's not get too far into that. You know, we go all day. Well, I can go all day about the beauty of the word why, the question that is why. There's a reason why children always ask why, and there's a reason why adults don't like why. But that's a whole other conversation. But anyways, so as we were talking, you know, I expressed my belief that I don't believe that COVID 19 is a man-made virus. And I was asked why. And I gave an answer that was honest, but I didn't feel like I gave an answer that was sufficient. So as I sat up thinking about this question of why I don't believe this virus is man-made, it also made me think about why I don't believe some other things are the way they are, and why I do believe other things are the way they are. So I decided, instead of dragging this thing out and then going back and until we have the next conversation and then bringing it back up, I could talk about it here and see what you guys think about these questions as we transition into the law 748, the CARES Act. Want you guys to be thinking about, why do you think this is man-made, or do you think it's not man-made? And so here are some reasons for me. So the number one reason is viruses are just too hard to control. Not only is it hard to control a virus, but in the context of America, and we're talking in context of America here, it is, you're not dealing with isolated culture groups that sit in land masses with lines drawn to where people stay in their area. There's a lot of intermingling going on. There's a lot of inner traveling going on between cultures and social classes and economic classes. And when you have a situation where groups of people are regularly intermingling with each other, it becomes very difficult to create a virus that is specific to one group versus another. As soon as you release it, you have to worry about crossover and it coming back. And this is a point that I believe can be made in several different ways, several different places. And that's not even to get into the mutation factor that would inevitably result, because even if you designed the virus to do one thing to a certain group of people, once it's introduced, viruses mutate very rapidly. And so for those that don't know, because I know a lot of people are having this conversation and they're not entirely sure what a virus is. A virus is a cellular parasite. Okay, it's just a floating piece of protein and genetic material, DNA or RNA. Now, if it's DNA, then it's a DNA virus, and those don't mutate quite as fast. DNA viruses, well, when DNA itself is read, it has a structure that comes packaged with it that proofreads the codes that are made or the proteins that are made from the DNA and ensures that that changes to the structure or any errors in transcription are corrected. So DNA doesn't mutate as much because a mutation is essentially a change in the transcription of the genetic material. RNA, on the other hand, does not have that proofreading component. So it's just a straight transcription of genetic material from one form to another. And as such, RNA viruses are a lot more prone to mutations, and they mutate at a rate that's a lot more rapid than DNA viruses. Now, when you come into COVID-19, all of the coronaviruses are RNA viruses. That's why you have to get a flu shot every year. Not only is it that it is a dead strand, it is a dead strand inoculation, which means that because it's introduced to your body, and some inoculations, because it's introduced to your body as a dead strand, your body only gets temporary immunity to it. You have to go back because the immunity isn't permanent. But another issue here is that because it's an RNA virus, it mutates very fast. And so what's coming out this year is going to be different from what came out last year. And those mutations are largely caused by interactions with cellular material, interactions with people. The more people a virus infects, the more it mutates, because it's in that transcription process when a virus is propagating and spreading itself that the mutations occur. Outside of that process, there are some environmental factors, some various forms of radiation, things like that, that could cause mutation, that could cause the damage to the genetic material inside of a virus. But outside of a body where it is doing what it does, there isn't much mutation. And so that's where I go back to my original point of, if you introduce something into the wild, into a populace, it's going to mutate. And as far as I'm aware, there's no way to control for that mutation, because you can't control for the genetic material in each one of the hosts that the virus might bump into. And that also goes into a separate spiel about how genetically similar we all are, especially here in America. Everybody's kind of intermingled. Now, sure, there are some people that are more white than black, or more black than white, or more native, or more Hispanic, or more whatever. And I know, understand what I'm talking about, races and ethnicity groups. But the fact of the matter here is that genetically, we are similar in a lot of regards. And so what you would be coding for is culture. But how do you code for culture? And I'm not saying you can't code certain circumstances where somebody's culture wouldn't cause them to be more likely to be in an area where they could be infected, or be more likely to be in a situation where an infection could be made worse, like a pre-existing condition in the black community that has to do with heart disease or asthma or anything like that. But what I'm saying is, it begins to be very, very difficult to control in this space. The other issue is, my number two reason was that there are more effective and efficient ways of extermination with far less risk than man-made viruses. And when we talk about man-made viruses, a lot of the times we talk about them in abstraction. We don't talk about them within the context of how many resources would be required for a virus to be constructed. And I'm not just talking about financial resources. I'm talking about intellectual resources. I'm talking about social capital as well, having the trust of the people. And that introduces a level of risk, because if the virus gets out and it can be traced back, and even if it can't be traced back, if the virus gets out and it does too much harm, ruling organizations tend to lose a lot of power when the populace no longer trusts that organization or that institution or that state or that government to do what it said it would do, which is keep them safe. That's one of the primary responsibilities of a government, is to keep its citizens safe. If people no longer feel like their government can do that, you start running into a whole host of other issues. So there are far more effective and efficient ways of extermination or even of affecting social and emotional and political change than a man-made virus. And then when you add the risk in, it doesn't make a lot of sense to go about that endeavor to be in that situation. It doesn't make sense to me. And then the third reason I'll give is that we haven't seen very many examples of man-made viruses being used throughout history. Now, I know this is one of those we don't know situations because we only know what we know and we don't know what we don't know. And if we don't know that, say, tuberculosis was a man-made virus, then we don't know that it was a man-made virus. So you might be giving people a free pass when there should be some attribution there. But we haven't seen that, as far as we know. Now, to that I say, most of the examples of biological warfare that we have seen really are the release of naturally occurring, usually non-enhanced versions of a pathogen in a location that would cause spread. And is usually placed in positions that will prevent spread from coming back to the cultures to utilize it. And I go back to, in America, we're just too intermingled for that. Biologically and socially and economically. It's too hard to control spread in a place like America. Especially when you consider the freedoms that everybody wants to have. I mean, think about it. They can't even get people to stay in their homes during the middle of an active pandemic that's killed hundreds of thousands of people and infected, you know, more than a million. So it's just hard to guarantee that it won't show back up on your doorstep. And with regard to COVID in particular, we've seen this coronavirus strand is very similar to other coronavirus strands that we've seen, like the previous SARS virus, like the MERS virus. There was an Asian flu, that's what they were calling it in 1957. There was a Hong Kong flu, which circled the globe in 1968. There are plenty of examples of coronaviruses causing pandemics, H1N1, the Spanish flu, back in 1918. You can just go all the way back. There are plenty of examples, like I said, of coronaviruses spreading. But even here, when you look at biological warfare being used, you know, you can go all the way back to 600 BC when there was a herb used during the siege of Crissa. You know, our Emperor Barbarossa poisoning water wells with human bodies in Tortona, Italy in 1155. Our Tartar forces catapulting bodies of plague victims over the walls of Kaffa and the Crimean Peninsula in 1346. And we can go just down the line. 1495, Spanish mixed wine with blood of leprosy patients to sell to their French foes in Naples, Italy. You know, the Russian troops also catapulted human bodies of plague victims in the Swedish cities. And the catapulting of human bodies of plague victims is a fairly common thing. Well, I won't say common, but it's a lot more common than it should be. Humans are fucking disgusting. Anyways, you know, you just, Napoleon flooded the plains around Italy to enhance the spread of malaria. Confederates sold clothing of yellow fever and smallpox patients to Union troops during the Civil War. You know, you just go down the line. Japan used anthrax, but Iraq used mustard gas and sarin, which is chemical warfare. But as we go down the line, we're seeing people perfectly capable of utilizing naturally occurring substances as weapons without the need for biological enhancements. There are deadly enough viruses out there already. So for me, and we could talk about this all day, literally, and I know I've already been talking about it for a substantial amount of time. But for me, you know, I go back to these three, and there's a whole list of reasons I have for why I don't believe that COVID is man-made and why I don't believe that man-made viruses are as rampant as a lot of us seem to think they are. But at the end of the day, it's all subjective opinion. It's all what you think. You know, do you think that it is? You know, just like I can't prove that certain things that have happened haven't been man-made with nefarious intentions. You know, likewise, it's difficult to prove. It's even more difficult to prove, I'll admit that, that these things were nefariously created with malicious intent behind them. That's even more difficult to prove, because if somebody has the power to do that, then you also have to assume that they have the power to keep it hidden. But, you know, those are my reasons. There are more effective and efficient ways to do whatever it is you're trying to do. And we just haven't seen many examples of it. Now, that's not to say viruses don't serve a purpose, and that's not to say viruses can't be manipulated. Recumbent viruses are utilized in vaccines. There are various different cell therapies that utilize the mechanical structure of viruses to repair certain damages in the DNA or the internal structures of cells. There are plenty of different ways that viruses have been utilized to repair, and so it would be ignorant and naive to think that there aren't also ways that viruses could be used for nefarious intent. So I'm not saying that they aren't. I'm just saying that I don't believe it. But I'm also not saying that I'm right and you're wrong. I'm just saying that it's my perspective. But it is an interesting conversation, especially when you can start drilling down into the deeper narratives of what's going on, and especially when you're discussing with people that have a level of understanding about biology, cell structure, virology, and all these other things. And I'm not talking about it on the level of being like a professional virologist or a professional scientist or a professional biologist, because none of us are that. We're all hobbyists. But it's just interesting to have it, a conversation like that, on a level where you can get into a level of depth and detail, especially if it's a level of depth and detail that pushes you based on where you are. So, and I think that's the key to most conversations, finding people that can push you where you are. You don't want to be with people that are too far beneath you in terms of their level of understanding, and you definitely don't want to be with people that are too far above you in terms of their level of understanding. But nonetheless, it's an interesting conversation, so we're going to transition, but I want to know what you think. Tell me what you guys think about this situation. Do you think man-made viruses are running rampant, and why? Do you think that there are a lot of them out there? Why? Do you not think so? Why? Let me know. And so now we're going to go ahead and get into it. And I do apologize if that previous section was kind of disjointed or ramblish or anything like that. I wasn't going to do it. I was just going to do what I was going to do. But I did get some comments about breaking up the monotony and wanting to know more about what I thought about various subjects. And as I was preparing the show and getting ready to record, I was just like, you know what? That was a very interesting conversation. I'm still thinking about it. So let's just go ahead and kind of do that. So I didn't take notes. I'm not a very good talker when I don't have my notes in front of me. So I apologize if it was disjointed or whatnot. But it is what it is. So we're moving on. So we're getting into Title III. And Title III is the meat and potatoes of this thing. If you are really asking what you can buy with $2 trillion, it seems like the choice that Congress has made is a lot of changes to the healthcare layout. Now, it has 6 subtitles, 11 parts, 6 subparts, and even after this thing was formatted down from the original 854 pages to 335 pages, page 80 to page 89 are all Title III. 33% of this 6-part document is right here in Title III. So let's hop right on into it. The first bit that we're going to be breaking off today. And Title III is titled Supporting America's Healthcare System in the Fight Against the Coronavirus. It has the short title of the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act. Sound familiar? In that, it makes sense that this would be the longest section, as most of the other things in this law are add-ons to this title. The first subtitle covers health provisions and leads us into the first part and the first subpart. Now, part one covers supply shortages, and subpart one covers medical supplies. Now, section 3101 says that the National Academies will report on America's medical product supply chain. And what this does is it mandates that within 60 days of this law passing, which will be on May 26th, the Secretary of Health and Human Services has to enter into an agreement with the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. I'm going to call that the National Sciences, because or the National Academies, because that's what they called it, to examine and report on the security of the U.S. medical product supply chain without actually compromising U.S. security with the report. HHS and the National Academies work together quite frequently, so this isn't anything new or unusual. But the report will specifically assess the and evaluate the dependency of the U.S. private and government on critical drugs and devices made in other countries. Now, analyzing the supply chain of drugs and devices with the highest priority to fighting COVID, public health, or national security risk associated with dependencies on other nations. Supply chain information gaps are also going to be analyzed, and potential economic impacts of increased domestic manufacturing are also going to be analyzed. So they're looking at analyzing three things here. They're looking at analyzing the supply chain of drugs and devices, especially with regards to fighting COVID. They're looking at analyzing the public health or national security risk associated with dependencies on other nations. They're looking at supply chain information gaps, and they're also going to be looking at the potential economic impacts of ramping up domestic manufacturing, which is something that everybody has been talking about for decades now. America becoming the manufacturing powerhouse that it once was, and no longer being the service-based economy that it now is. And there are a lot of discussions on both sides of that. This administration very much seems to want to bring manufacturing back to America. I have my doubts about whether or not millennials and the younger generations actually want to work in a factory. Because they've been brought up in the service economy. They're used to service sector jobs. Manufacturing is a different world. Not saying they wouldn't do it if they had to, but I'm just saying I have my questions about their willingness to even want to do that. A lot of times when you hear this bringing back manufacturing thing, you're hearing it from older people that remember when America was the manufacturing powerhouse. You don't hear that too much from younger people, but that's neither here nor there, because the fact of the matter is that America does have a dependency on foreign nations for critical medical infrastructure and supplies, and that does pose a security risk. And if there is one thing you want to be manufacturing in your country, it would be your medical stuff. You know, your food and your medicine. You want that to be in-house, if at all possible. And there are a couple other things on that list, but those two are definitely on the list. Anyways, moving on, moving forward, moving it together. So in addition to analyzing those things, the report will also make recommendations which may include a plan to improve the resiliency of the supply chain for critical drugs and devices, and to address any vulnerabilities or potential disruptions that would endanger the U.S. It may also include strategies to promote redundancy and contingency planning in the supply chain, encourage domestic manufacturing, improve information gaps, improve planning considerations for medical product supply chain capacity during public health emergencies, and promote the accessibility of such drugs and devices. Now, while conducting the study and developing the report, input from HHS, Homeland Security, DOD, Department of Commerce, Department of State, Veterans Affairs, Department of Justice, and other federal agencies as appropriate will be considered. And relevant stakeholders will also be consulted through public meetings and other meetings with healthcare providers, medical professional societies, state-based agencies, public health experts, state and local health departments, state medical boards, patient groups, medical product manufacturers, healthcare distributors, wholesalers, and group purchasing organizations, pharmacists, and other entities with experience in healthcare and public health as appropriate. Now, here's where I stand on all of these reports that are being commissioned. You already noticed, because I've said it about all of the other reports that I've looked at. I don't really the reports are needed and they're powerful tools when they're actually done on time and correctly with proper scope and proper due diligence and attention to detail. How often does that happen? Well, as a member of the public, my faith is not high because we've seen reports come out years late, if they come out at all. We've also seen reports come out that were just horrible, just trash. So my faith, and especially this administration, and when I say this administration, I mean the entire government, because the entire government has been shaped by this administration. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. What I am saying, though, is that this administration clearly has no qualms about allowing their political agendas to get in the way of what should be apolitical matters. And they have no problems whatsoever with standing in the way of social and cultural and traditional political norms in order to achieve whatever goals they want to achieve. And they have no qualms about burying things that shouldn't be buried and then fighting when they're dug up. So in this administration in particular, all of these indications about a report being generated, I'm not really looking forward to it. I don't think it's going to mean much. I've already looked for some of the reports that are supposed to be generated in earlier sections of this piece of legislation, and I haven't found them yet. That doesn't mean they haven't been created. They probably were created, and they just haven't been released because of security whatevers. But I just don't have a lot of faith in anybody on the governmental level, or even on complex organizational levels, even corporate levels, to create plans and do anything meaningful with those plans. And so it's not just about creating the plan, it's about doing something with it. I don't have a lot of faith that things are going to be done with these plans. And that's just been from my experience and my research. It's just shown me that more than likely nothing is going to be done with these plans. So are this report, I don't even think anybody's going to read the damn report. Nobody even read the damn Mueller report, which is one of the most significant reports of the modern age. But nobody read it. Well, people read it. I read it. But you get what I'm saying. Anyways, so we move on to 3102, and that adds PPE, personal protective equipment, ancillary medical supplies, and other applicable supplies required for the administration of drugs, vaccines, and other biological products, medical devices, and diagnostic tests into the national stockpile, meaning that the government has to keep a certain portion of these on reserve. And I do apologize. I realize I've been fucking up words since I started, right? It is currently 4 a.m. I haven't slept. And I got a lot going on. So give me some slack. All right, chill the fuck out. Jesus Christ. All right, give me a break. So anyways, Section 303 adds some liability protections for manufacturers. I'm sorry, 3103. I told you I'm tired. Adds some liability protections for manufacturers of respiratory protective devices approved by the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. And the goal is to encourage the manufacturing of these items by reducing the chances of being held responsible for particular occurrences. So if you can't be held liable for creating a faulty whatever under certain situations, and that product has a larger profit margin than the products you are creating, especially when you look at the shortage and things happening right now with the pandemic, then, you know, why wouldn't you step up and create this product? So it's meant to encourage these companies to produce more of the medical products, the PPE, the devices, the drugs, things like that. Well, in this case in particular, the respiratory protective devices that the country needs in order to fight back this pandemic. So, subpart B is focused on mitigating emergency drug shortages. Now, section 3111 requires the FDA to prioritize the review of drug applications in order to mitigate potential drug shortages. So, in order to keep us from running out of drugs, all drugs are being fast-tracked if they are the drugs that we're potentially running out of. Which is interesting because there's currently a debate going on about which drugs are effective. I know I talked in the intro to the last show about hydrochloroquine, and how that was being championed, only to find out that not only does it not work, but it potentially makes the matters worse by killing people. But, you know, a lot of these drugs that they thought would work, been shown to work in limited circumstances, but then when you blow that thing out and start giving it to more people, you find out that this does not work. It's actually dangerous for a lot of people. So I'm a little bit wary about the whole fast-tracking process, but I've said that before on other shows. I don't like the way the country fast-tracks and removes safety precautions when we're in a national emergency. That seems like the time when you would want to be more cautious, not less cautious. But maybe if more energy and effort was spent on prevention, we wouldn't have to deal with response the way we do. But, you know, what do I know, right? Just a guy with glasses on a computer at 4 in the morning. So, Section 3112 is focused on reporting requirements in response to drug shortages. And more specifically, it requires more reporting information. Now, disruptions to the supply of life-saving drugs and devices have to be reported already. This simply adds to that list. It adds any drug that is critical to the health, to the public health during a public health emergency declared by the secretary. And it also requires them to have a backup plan for identified drugs in order to maintain the supply. Now, this plan is subject to the inspection of the secretary, but doesn't have to be shown unless it's asked for. I ain't even got to go into why I think that's trash. The section also requires, within 6 months of this law passing and every 90 days afterwards, that the secretary transmit a report regarding the drugs of the current drug shortage list to the administrator of the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services. If a report has been generated, then for the next 5 years, any manufacturer of the drug will require a copy of that report be sent to the appropriate offices of the FDA with expertise regarding those shortages. Now, those manufacturing a drug on the list also have to report yearly to the secretary on the amount of drugs manufactured, prepared, propagated, compounded, or processed for commercial distribution. Here's the asterisk. Unless the secretary says it's not necessary. I don't know why they even put shit like that in there. Like, either you're going to mandate something or you're not. It should not be unless this one office says that it's not necessary. No, either it's necessary or it's not. And if you had to legislate it, then I'm going to go out on a limb and say somebody felt it was fucking necessary. I don't know what the hell is going on here. Like, I read through these things and I'm like, everything is written where it's like, we need to do something. But after we do it, CYA, why are you trying to cover your ass so much? Do something and then stand 10 toes down on it. And that's why everything's as fucked up as it is now, is because it's a bunch of people in Washington. It's a bunch of politicians, not just and on the federal level, but on all levels, that are so worried about keeping their job, because they don't have another way to contribute to society because they've been a politician forever. But they're so concerned about keeping their job that they're losing sight of the necessity of them, for them to do what's actually in the best interest of the nation, regardless of whether or not you keep your job because of it. And then we move on to subpart C, which is focused on preventing medical device shortages. And this one is going to be really short, because essentially 3121 does all of the above except for medical devices instead of medical drugs. So that is basically what it does. But like I said, at the end of all of these things, if you really want to know in detail word for word what it says, go check it out yourself. This is a general overview for people that are interested but don't necessarily have the time or the desire to read it. Or to read, you know, any of the articles that have been written about it, because at this point there have been a number of people that have covered this thing in detail. I remember when I first started looking at it, there wasn't all these reports out here for clarification, and I would have to go all over the place going all through U.S. code to try to figure out what the hell this particular section meant and how it related to what was currently in place. And now, even though I'm still doing that because I appreciate the intellectual workout, but now, you know, you could type in a section title and 15 articles will pop up of people explaining that specific section. So, you know, take advantage of that if you're curious. On the other hand, I apologize again to you guys for that first part of the show. I understand it may have been a bit disjointed. I'm just trying to think back through it right now because I literally didn't have notes. I just was talking for 20 minutes. But it felt good. It felt like it came out okay. But, you know, let me know about that, too, while you're also letting me know how you feel about man-made diseases and whether or not COVID is one of them and how widespread they are. And I'm not saying that I don't believe there are any man-made diseases. I think I clarified that. But let me know what you think. Let me know what you think of these shows. Always let me know what you think of the format and how everything is being utilized. Let me know if you agree or disagree. Like, I'm one of those dudes. I find it exciting to have conversations where people disagree with me because I usually learn something from that. Even if I don't change my stance, you know, I'm usually exposed to a different way of thinking. And that is valuable for me. Like, that is extremely important for me. So, without further ado, thank you. And I will see you next week on the next episode of
Lessons from the Screen. John Boy.
So I want to thank you guys once again for listening to the show. Always be sure to let me know what you think about it. The surest way to get in contact with me is to get in contact with me through the show, because I don't know which podcast directory you're listening to this on. But the show is always going to be www.freedomtrainradio.com. You click on the shows tab, you'll see Lessons from the Screen. Boop, 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 boop. There it is. So get in touch with me. Support your boy on Patreon, www.patreon.com/FLFTS. And that way you can give money per show or per month or however you want to do it. And you can give as much as you want. I don't want to give a number out there because I'm sure you want to give more than I would suggest. But I suggest, you know, $100 an episode would be a good amount. For all of you guys that were listening, went out and gave $100 an episode, that would definitely make things a little bit better, be able to produce episodes more frequently. Also, check out the App Store. Go ahead and download the Freedom Train app out of the App Store. If you got an Android phone, if you got an iPhone, it's coming. iPhone is difficult. You know, Apple is whatever. But if you got an Android, we already got you covered. So go check that out. And make sure you show love to all of the shows, The Fix, The Freedom Train Podcast, Shelby's World, Enigma Self, Our, you know, you name it. We got it. And we always expanding. So I will see you next week. And once again, thank you for listening. Let me know what you thought about this show. And answer the question. You know what the question is. Answer it.